The disappearance of famous TikToker Melissa Andre has gotten the media in a frenzy. And as a private investigator, I am hell-bent on finding out what happened to Melissa Andre. As many of you know, that TikTok is a famous social media platform where people post short videos displaying their talent or doing something silly. However, with the increasing number of TikTok dancers and comedians, it's difficult to stand out to the audience. When Melissa started doing TikTok, she thought the best thing she could do to be unique is to do something different. And who doesn't love a good horror story? So she decided to visit all the haunted places she could find and post her experiences on her TikTok account. Within months, she was famous, known as the Haunted Explorer. Melissa would visit many haunted places, as I mentioned before, and while she was in these places, she would record the place and herself using her phone. She did not have a cameraman or specialized cameras to record her adventures, and she also posted all her clips unedited as they are. In many of her posts, there were certain spooky things recorded, which got her a lot of comments and new followers on the platform. Slowly but surely, Melissa was becoming a famous TikToker. However, on October 31st, 2022, Melissa was in her home enjoying Halloween all by herself while watching scary movies when she heard a knock on the door. As usual, she thought it might be some kids asking for trick-or-treats. She had a bowl of sweets beside her front door for the very same reason. She opened the door but saw no one on her porch. She thought maybe someone was messing with her, so she closed the door and started watching the movie. Someone knocked once again, this time louder. Melissa had been to enough spooky and seemingly haunted places by now that she knew something was off. She immediately started recording with her phone and told all her viewers that someone was knocking on her door, but she could spot no one. This time, when she opened the door, she had her phone in her hand and she was recording the outside of her house. Melissa lived just across a church with a small street separating the two. Her front yard and the church's backyard were opposite one another. It was Halloween, so she could see people dressed as angels and demons hanging out in the church's backyard. She made some sarcastic comment about them in the video that she was recording and closed the door. For the rest of the evening, no more knocking or any weird sounds. Melissa posted the video immediately and told her viewers that she would update them if anything more happened. In the wee hours of the morning, around 2 a.m., Melissa heard another knock. By this time, she was sure that someone was messing with her. So she picked up her phone and started recording again while she opened the door. A few feet away, she saw two people standing in her front yard. They were wearing unusual attire. One of them was wearing a big long black gown, and the other was wearing a dark robe with a conical hat. It was pitch black outside, and all Melissa could see was the silhouette of these people. She stared at the figures as she could feel the figures staring back at her. Only a dim porch light illuminated her. In her video, we can clearly see that she was just silently staring at the figures, when one of them suddenly started running towards her, followed by the other. This startled Melissa, and she dropped her phone on the porch and ran inside the house. The video was uploaded to her TikTok account, and after that, Melissa Andre disappeared. Her father reported her missing 2 days later, and thus began the mystery of her disappearance. No one knows what happened to her after she ran into her house. Many other TikTokers say that it was a publicity stunt. Some say it was a Halloween prank gone wrong. Some old school folks say that she had attracted demons and evil spirits from some of the places she visited, and now they had attacked her. But none of these explanations make sense, as the cops found no signs of struggle in her house. It was as if she vanished in thin air. An area in the radius of a few miles was checked, and people around were asked if they had witnessed anything unusual, but nothing was found. No one knows what happened to TikToker Melissa Andre. So eventually, her parents hired me, Joseph Harris, to investigate the case of their missing daughter. However, in the course of my investigation, I have uncovered a few secrets of the famous TikToker. But the worst part of the story is all the investigation led me to an abandoned Amish town and a woman's dead body. Here is what I think might have happened with Melissa Andre. In one of her previous videos, Melissa had visited the same Amish town to record a video and find out if it was truly haunted. No one knew why the people living in this town had abandoned the place, although she did not encounter anything sinister there. While investigating, I found out that the people left this town because a small group of residents had started worshiping a demon called Asmodeus instead of Jesus. These people formed a cult and stayed back in the town even though the rest of the people left. When Melissa visited this place, she made it public by posting about it on her TikTok page, so many more tourists started visiting this abandoned Amish town. This might have disturbed the cult members, so they decided to do something about it. And two cult members showed up at her doorstep on Halloween night. The same two weirdly dressed figures she had seen in her front yard. They may have kidnapped her before she could defend herself and taken her back to this Amish town. When I was investigating the abandoned town, I came across a freshly dug grave, which was unmarked. When I dug it up, I found a naked body of a girl that had a reversed pentagram drawn on her back. Her face was smashed with a rock, so she was unrecognizable. But the thing that helped me identify it was Melissa Andre, the broken cell phone lying beside the dead body in the grave. As a detective, I have solved the case of the missing TikToker, Melissa Andre, aka Haunted Explorer. But how do I tell her parents what has truly happened to their daughter? Moreover, what do you guys think should be done with such cult members who kill innocent people to hide their evil deeds? Being an avid horror fan comes with its own perks and cons. For example, you are the first one to book tickets to the latest horror movie and later be spooked by your own shadow. Although from a very young age, I love to see all the haunted movies, Evil Dead, Oman, Exorcism, and Emily Rose, you name it. But deep down, I never really believed in any of it. Not to mention, I used to watch all the exciting videos about unsolved mysteries around the world. The Lost City of Atlantis and the Bermuda Triangle are my top favorites. But as I grew up and the challenges and demons of the real world hit me, this love of horror movies and the dark and mysterious perished slowly. Now all I do is watch a couple of good old haunted movies on Halloween and the next day go to my 9-to-5. Plus, living in the big city hardly spares you time to indulge in your childhood hobbies. There are bills to pay and work to be done. But a couple of days ago, something happened which does not have a rational explanation whatsoever. Trust me, despite my love for the haunted, I grew up to become a data analyst. This means I'm a person of science who analyzes everything before coming to a conclusion. But this event has left my rational mind baffled and forced me to consider this might be something out of the realm of science. But before I tell you exactly what I encountered, I want to tell you guys a short story. A long time ago, when good and evil roamed the earth free without any inhibition, when the humans were scared of the terrifying things out there and prayed to God and the angels for protection, there was an evil being that tormented the living beings on earth. This creature was tough to spot or identify, let alone catch and imprison. While all the other vile creatures could be captured or at least caught, this creature attacked the living beings when they least expected it. Some of the other creatures attacked villages and small settlements. This creature attacked a single person or a lone animal. Time and again, people, animal, and angels joined forces to terminate this evil being, but each attempt failed and the creature grew stronger and stronger. The main reason why no one could spot the creature was because it was invisible. And there were many of them. This creature, instead of hunting down its prey, lured it into a space where it felt comfortable attacking it. This creature was also called the Sound Monster in some parts of the world, as its technique was unique. It lured its next victim by mimicking the last sounds made by its previous victims. At last, by the grace of God, somehow these creatures were killed and captured. But some legends say that some of these creatures escaped and still roam the face of the earth. Now, as a sensible person, you may brush this story under the rug, claiming it to be nothing more than a legend. But what if I tell you I may have encountered one of these creatures right in the city I live in? You see, my work is hectic, and most nights than not, I work late, which means I must go home late. Luckily, My office is just a few blocks away from my apartment. I usually prefer walking to my office and back, just to get some exercise done. There's a McDonald's on the way back home, and I prefer grabbing a burger as dinner if I get too late. That day was no different. I had my Mac in my hand, and a milkshake in another. I was almost ready to fall into my bed when I would reach home, as I was so overworked that day. A few buildings past the McDonald's was a public restroom. Now, I never had to use this restroom ever because my apartment was so close by. But as I was passing in front of this restroom, I heard a woman yell for help. She was screaming and shouting. As a responsible citizen and a helpful person, I dropped my food and ran inside. However, as soon as I entered the restroom, the screaming stopped. There were a couple of stalls in there, and I kid you not, each of them was empty. I was so frantic when I entered the restroom that I started looking under each stall door to see if some lady needed help or not. But there was no one except me in the restroom. I felt a chill run down my spine as I stood in between the restroom and looked around the place. It was pin drop silence in there. I walked out of the place and resumed walking on my way. But before I could take even a step toward my home, the screaming began. This time, I wasn't worried or even scared. I was annoyed. This was definitely someone trying to play a prank on me. So I whipped my phone out of my bag and started recording as I entered the restroom once again. I checked each and every stall again. This time, I was filming everything, and once again, there was no one in there. I also decided to look for hidden speakers in maybe one of the stalls, on the walls, or under the sink. But no, there was nothing out of the ordinary there. This was truly terrifying. I walked out, and the screams continued. I did not have the guts to go back in, but I didn't feel like walking away as well. So I called the cops. A few minutes later, the cops arrived, and as soon as they reached the scene, the screaming stopped. The cops searched the restroom more thoroughly than I did, and landed on the same conclusion that there were no hidden speakers in there, nor were there any ducts or rooms in there. When they saw the video that I had filmed, they also heard the screaming which I had recorded while I was waiting for them. None of them had an explanation, so they sealed off the restroom for the time being and dropped me off at home. As soon as I reached my apartment, I posted the video online, and within minutes, there were hundreds of comments. I started doing my research on the internet, but did not find anything concrete. That's when a comment grabbed my attention. It was an elderly lady who had typed a single-line comment: "The Legend of Skin Crawlers." When I looked it up on the internet, I came across the story I told you before. Whether it was a skin crawler or not, I will never know for sure, and this will forever be an unsolved mystery in my life.
Hello, my name is Elisa. I recently finished my college degree and graduated as what I always wanted to be, a librarian. When I was a child, my whole family was killed by a violent and brutal robbery at Christmas. The only reason I survived was because my parents hid me in time, and the robbers weren't very interested in finding me either. After that experience, I locked myself away in my parents' passion, books. While they were looking for families to adopt me, I was the quietest and most intelligent child at the foster care house. I read as many books as I could and whenever I could. What at first was a way to get closer to my parents also became my passion. Besides, I knew that if any family saw me reading, they would surely choose me. Eventually, I realized that I wasn't wrong, although I wish I had been. The White family was the one chosen to adopt me. They seemed nice enough, although I must admit they were very disciplined. Maybe that's why they were interested in me when they found out that I liked to read. I hear everyone complaining about how difficult adoption is, and it surely is, but for people with as much money as the Whites, it wasn't. Before I could even begin to assimilate, I had to go through the adoption process. Before it could even begin to sink in that I was going to have a new family, they were already filling out the adoption papers. It scared me how quickly they did it. But at the time, I was thankful because I was sure I would have a secure future and a family to take me in. In the beginning, Adam and Miriam were very good parents. They were demanding, yes, but at the same time, they were very patient with my adjustment to this new life. Unfortunately, this did not last that long. The problem with many couples is that not all of them are ready to be parents, and they welcomed me so quickly, they didn't even give themselves adequate time to assimilate. The Whites began to get bored with me, to regret adopting me. They became increasingly impatient with me. I didn't misbehave, not at all, but I made mistakes that were unacceptable to them, like doing the dishes wrong, not taking off my slippers when I entered the house, or not understanding a math exercise at the speed they would like. What started out as demanding parents soon turned to violent and abusive parents. The punishments were inhumane, and neither of them ever had any compassion for me. Eventually, I got used to it, but once in the library, it all came to a head. That day, Miriam felt a little guilty that her husband had left me without food all night. It was nothing she hadn't done before, but for some reason, that day, she felt bad about doing it. As a way of asking for my forgiveness, the next day she took me to the library, which her sister owned, and a few minutes before the library opened, my aunt left, leaving me alone with my mother to choose the book she wanted. Everything started out well. Miriam had many recommendations and seemed in a good mood. But from one moment to the next, everything changed. I accidentally dropped several books on the floor. It was no big deal. I quickly got up to pick them up. But at that moment, I noticed that something about her had changed. Furious, she told me that I had embarrassed her in her sister's library. That I shouldn't be so careless, and that I had done it on purpose to ruin her day, and that I was ungrateful for not appreciating the good gesture of bringing me here. Apologizing, very sorry for what I had done, I grabbed the books I already had and went to choose them at the table. I couldn't decide between the books, so I opened one to look inside. That was the worst mistake I could have made. Angry at how long it was taking, my adoptive mother closed the book violently and began to squeeze it, hurting my fingers in the process. With the bookcase empty, but not letting go of the book, she started yelling at me angrily, saying I was making fun of her. In reaction to what she had done to me, I started to cry. But this made her even angrier. Miriam covered my mouth with her hands and told me to stop screaming, and that I was also doing it on purpose to make her look bad. Without finishing with me, she grabbed my hair while I tried not to cry, so as not to make a noise, to which she responded by throwing me off the table. As I stood up, still crying, she walked towards me slowly. Her eyes were red, and she was shaking with anger. I had never seen her so angry. I stood still, ready to receive my punishment, until I noticed something else. She had her car keys in her hand, and she was holding it like a weapon. The keys had a sharp tip. Did she want to stick it in me? My body froze with fear, and my only reaction was to run, no matter the punishment, no matter what might come next. Miriam started to chase me all over the library, dodging all the tables and the shelves. Little by little, she ended up cornering me. I could see her clench the key in her hand. This was the end of me. Suddenly, I saw people running toward my adopted mother. It was my aunt and a library employee. They both stopped Miriam before she could do anything to me. And as they took her away, I fell down crying. As I cried, I could only hear her saying this was my fault. My aunt did not open the library for another hour, but as the staff began to arrive, they kicked my mother. My aunt took care of me for a while, and when she found out everything that had happened to me, she reported her sister and husband and asked social services if she could take care of me. That was the last time I saw them since my aunt also stopped talking to them. Something tells me that if my adoptive parents had wanted to, they could have kept me. But I feel that my aunt did them a big favor. Not that it hurt my feelings or anything, since she did that favor for me too.
I am Danelle, and I'm a college-going student. I do not believe in ghosts or spirits. Instead, I believe in science. But the incident at my elder cousin's wedding scares and astonishes me to this date. It was a winter wedding, just as Mia wanted. A destination winter wedding on a beach resort. Being the eldest in the family, her wedding was happening way before the rest of us cousins. Naturally, the whole family was united for this grand event, and everyone was very excited. Mia's side of the family comes from money, and hence they had booked a suite in the resort for all the relatives to live. My mum was unwell, so she could not attend the wedding, hence I had to represent her and me at the wedding. The hotel suite was to be shared by mum and me, but she was not there. I was the only one staying in the room. Honestly, I love hotel rooms and everything related to it. So it was not a big deal for me to stay alone, and I was a big college girl after all, so hardly anything scared me. The wedding celebration was 2 days long, means we had to stay 2 nights in the hotel. My room was on the second floor and had a beach view, which pleased me even more. Now, I have a big family, and there are a lot of first and second cousins. Mia also invited a lot of friends and colleagues who were probably her age and married with a few kids. So there was a lot of unknown crowd for the wedding. The first day celebration was more of a family get-together. I and my cousins had a blast. After the celebration, at about 1 at night, I returned to my room and was in desperate need of a shower. I was a bit tipsy, so I stumbled my way into the shower and cleaned the stench of sweat and alcohol from myself. When I returned from the shower, there was a little girl with blonde hair, green eyes, maybe 3 or 4 years old, sitting on my bed and playing with my clutch, which I had just thrown on the bed while I made my way towards the shower. I was a bit spooked at first as to how she might have got in, but then thought that maybe I had left the door open by mistake while I came in. The girl was engrossed in playing with my purse and did not notice me at all until I called for her. I said, "Hey, baby girl, what are you doing here?" She looked up at me and smiled a toothy smile. "I was just playing with the bag. I like it. It is colorful and shiny. Mum has the same," she replied. "But how did you get in?" I asked, sounding as friendly as I could. The girl said nothing, but instead pointed at my door. "What's your name?" I asked again. "Cindy," was her reply. "So, well, Cindy, it's too late to be in someone else's room. Shouldn't you be with your mum now?" I asked sweetly, to which she gave a strange reply. "Mum left me here." Cindy climbed off my bed and away into the hotel corridor. I was still wrapped in the towel, and my hair was dripping on the carpet below. I was extremely exhausted. And even when I should have checked after Cindy, I decided otherwise. I shut the door, got changed, and switched off the lights, and climbed into the bed, too tired to think or do otherwise. The next day was the wedding, and the whole hotel was bustling with the guests, caterers, and whatnot. It was a grand wedding, followed by an equally amazing reception. I was truly happy for Mia, and wished Mum was here to witness it too. After the reception, as all the guests were moving back to their rooms to call the night off, I and one of my cousins, Sarah, were headed to our rooms too, as hers was on the same floor. I narrated to her the incident with Cindy. Sarah knew of many Mia's friends and colleagues as they work in the same firm. I asked her if she knows who was Cindy's mom, and how could she leave Cindy at someone else's door so late at night? To which Sarah replied she did not recall any of Mia's friends or colleagues having a daughter named Cindy. By the time we had this talk, we were on the second floor. We went our separate ways to our suites. As I entered the room, I felt like something was off. I checked the whole suite for something amiss or out of order, but everything was as it was. I went to the balcony, still in the reception outfit. The moon had cast a soft shadow on the beach, and there, right in front of me on the beach, on the damp sand, sat Cindy. The waves were rising by every minute, signs of a coming high tide. I was worried sick for the little girl, so without thinking any further, I yelled her name. She was so engrossed in playing that she couldn't hear me. And suddenly, she got up and started walking in the direction of the water. By now, I was screaming and running down the flight of stairs to reach the beach. I did not bother that my dress was being dragged behind me, probably wet and dirty in the wet sand. I ran in the direction of the water, but in the minutes it took me to get down, Cindy had disappeared. I went waist deep in the water, but she was nowhere. I was ready to dive deep when I heard someone calling my name. I turned around to see a hotel butler calling me. I tried explaining to him what was happening, that I had to go deep to get her. But he was having none of it. He shouted for me to come out. I had no idea what took over me, but I thought for a split second that maybe Cindy's mom took her away. I returned to the shore, and the butler practically shoved me in the hotel reception. The receptionist and some of the other hotel staff were gathered, and everyone had a worried look on. I asked them what happened, to which one of them told me a story of a real-life incident that shook me to my core. Cindy had died in the sea at night a few years ago. The room I was living in was booked by Cindy's father on the day she died. He was having an affair and wanted to leave Cindy and her mom. When Cindy's mom found out, she stomped into the hotel along with her daughter and left her at her father's suite door. Her mom did not want Cindy's responsibility either, so she had abandoned her at her father's door. Her dad did not open the door for Cindy. Eventually, she wandered off on the beach and drowned in the rising high tide. Since that day, she was seen by many occupants of that room. Apparently, I was the seventh person to run into the sea to save her. A woman before me had died saving her. This information paralyzed me for a while. Barely able to speak, I spent the night in Sarah's room, too afraid to step in my suite. I still remember her face so clearly, those green eyes, toothy grin, and blonde hair. And more than anything, I remember her last words to me. Mom left me here.
It happened about 8 years ago. I was in my fourth and final year of college, and all I could think about at that time was partying. I wasn't what you would call a typical college student, as while most of my friends found a good balance between studying and partying, I spent all my time in bars, clubs, basically any place the party was. At that time, all my friends used to call me Trevor the Party Monster. I carried that title like a badge of honor as I made sure I was always the first person at every party, event, or get-together that was going on. Don't get me wrong, I didn't just party for the sake of it, and it wasn't because I didn't like to study. I partied because it made me feel free, and I was happiest whenever I was jumping up and down to some loud music with a drink in my hand. However, the freedom I felt from partying all the time turned into nothing but crippling fear after my fateful experience at the Midnight Bar. It was the 23rd of November, 2015. I'd gotten a text earlier that day saying there was going to be a lit party at the Midnight Bar. I'd been to basically every single bar in my vicinity at that point, but I'd never heard of the Midnight Bar before. I assumed it was a new place that had just opened up, and this party was their attempt to get some publicity. Since they were a new bar, I didn't really know the people behind the party, but just like every party I heard about, I didn't hesitate to go. I started my preparations by telling all my friends where the party was located. I then called my friend Jimmy, who was a DJ, and I told him to get his set ready, as I had already talked to some people to get him to play the music at the party. After that, I called my drug guy, Nash, to get some pills that we could party hard with. There were a few other things that I had to do after my calls, but soon enough, all the preparations were done, and I made my way to the Midnight Bar. The turnout was huge, as I really got the word out there. By the time I arrived, most of my friends were already there, so I joined them. We ordered shot after shot as we started to party hard. Nash had gotten us a wide variety of recreational drugs like LSD, Molly, and Angel Dust, PCP. There were also some magic mushrooms and vitamin K, ketamine. We each took a small dose of our picks to take the party to another level. I was having the time of my life at that point. The music was blaring, I had a beer in my hand, and I was dancing my heart out. I told myself that things couldn't get any better than this, but that's when I saw her. I can never forget how entranced I was by her eyes. She was beautiful. I watched her as she danced, and I admired every swish and sway her body made. It felt like I was under a spell as my body moved towards her without hesitating. When I reached where she was, I said, "Hi, I'm Trevor. I think you're beautiful." She laughed before responding with, "Hey, I'm Sandra Hale, and I know who you are. You're Trevor Mount, the party monster. Your reputation precedes you." I then smiled and said, "I didn't know drinking booze could make me famous." We both laughed at my joke before Sandra asked, "Do you want to dance?" That was all I wanted at that point, so I immediately said yes. We spent the entire party together from there. We danced, took some more shots, and party drugs. I was enjoying myself, and I could tell Sandra was also having fun. We'd really hit it off as we enjoyed the party. Now, I don't know why I did this. I'm guessing it's because I was so excited at that point, but I took my shirt off and I kissed Sandra. She kissed me back and it felt like I was on top of the world. I was going to kiss her again when one of my friends, Brian, who was passing by with a camera around his neck, told me and Sandra to smile for a picture. We both looked at the camera for the picture to be taken. Sandra was behind me and I was up front. I then heard Brian say, "Smile, Trevor." But before he could take the picture, everything went quiet. For some reason, I couldn't hear the loud blaring music anymore. At first, I thought something was wrong with my ears because I was sure they didn't stop playing the music as I was just hearing it a few seconds ago. My loss of hearing wasn't the only odd thing that was happening as I realized that I couldn't move my body anymore. It felt like time had stopped for me and things just got worse from there as I watched Sandra's lower jaw expand to an inhumane level and how her now lengthy tongue rolled onto my skin. Horrified, I tried to scream, but I couldn't move my mouth. My brain tried to make sense of everything as I asked myself why I was frozen in place and why Sandra had now turned into something that looked like it crawled out of hell. As I felt her tongue on my skin, an unimaginable pain rippled through my body. I don't know really how to explain it, but it felt like I was dying and my life was being sucked away by Sandra's morbidly long tongue on my skin. I don't know how long it lasted, but it could have been an hour or two. Soon, everything around me started to get blurry and eventually, it all went dark. I woke up in the hospital a few hours later surrounded by a doctor and my friends. They told me that I'd passed out from dehydration and the mixing of hard drugs with alcohol. I was still scared of the horrific things I'd experienced, so I started to tell them what happened with Sandra, but my friend Brian, who rushed me to the hospital, told me that there was no one named Sandra at the party. Shocked, I told him that was impossible, and I asked Brian about the picture he took. Brian then told me that I was alone when the picture was taken. Frustrated that no one was listening to me, coupled with the fact that they were all looking at me like I was crazy, I started to scream and cry at the same time. I remember screaming the words, "She was real! Sandra was real and she's a monster! She's a demon!" I was soon subdued and given a sedative that calmed me down. I spent another 2 days in the hospital as they wanted to check if everything was all right with my head. No one believed me. All the doctors said I'd hallucinated what I saw due to the hallucinogenic drugs I'd taken, but I knew that wasn't true. I had made sure to take the drugs in small doses during the party, so it was hard to believe that I hallucinated something that lucid. Plus, I never had an episode like this ever since I started doing recreational drugs. I told the doctors this, hoping they would believe me. And even though they confirmed that I'd taken the drugs in small doses, they told me that there was no other possible explanation to what I'd seen. My only hope now was the picture Brian took. But whenever I show the people the picture Brian had taken, they tell me that they can only see me in the image. Things just got stranger from there. as any time I look at the picture, I can still see her behind me. I don't know why I was the only one who could see Sandra in the photo, but it drove me crazy and I had to undergo some serious therapy. It's been a long time since this happened, but I still haven't forgotten that incident. I have my theories as I look into the morbid experience to prove to myself that I wasn't crazy. It was hard, but I finally found two people, a man in Slovakia and another man in Greece, who said they'd experienced something similar at a strange bar in their countries. At the end of my research, I believed the woman called Sandra Hale was a succubus, a female demon who seduces men and feeds on their life force for sustenance. And the only thing I have to prove it is this picture. I've tried time and time again to get people to believe me, but no one does, as they all say, I'm not right in the head. So I decided to put my story out there. This entire incident has also put me off parties, especially the ones held in bars. So be careful out there, as you never know if it's your favorite bar where the actual party monsters like Sandra are lurking.